You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast. This is the 11th week of the year, from March 11th to March 18th, going from Genesis 42:27 to Genesis 45:24. In this part of the story, we have the brothers of Joseph, the sons of Jacob, who've come down to Egypt because there's a famine. This is part of the seven lean years that Joseph interpreted in Pharaoh's dream. There's a famine. It's affecting really the entire world. So people are flocking to Egypt to buy food. And Joseph finds them. And one thing the commentators say is that Joseph knew they were going to come and placed spies at the gates of the city, and he said, you know, watch out for 10 men coming from this place. You know, it wouldn't be too hard to spot these people, even though a lot of people were coming. And he had them brought to him, and they buy food, and he puts the money back. Joseph tells his people, he says, after these guys buy their food, put their money that they paid back in their sacks. So the brothers get their food, and they put the bags on the wagon or whatever, and they head back to the land of Israel. And when they get to an inn, they open the bag, and there was the money, which is a surprise, obviously. And it says in Genesis 42:27, and as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender in the lodging place, he espied his money, and behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. So he wants to feed his donkey, his ass, and he finds the money. This is not a good thing, because they've already been accused of spying by Joseph, and now they're worried they're going to be seen as thieves. And more than that, it's confusing, because it's scary to them, because I think these brothers have at some level some feeling that they did something wrong in their lives, and these ominous little things are confusing to them. And as we see later, when the truth is revealed about Joseph, this makes sense. He's sort of playing a trick on them to get them to think about what they're doing. And this is similar to what happens in recovery and addiction. Is we go through experiences that seem extremely bad. Bad luck, bad circumstances. We are upset, we're surprised, we're scared by what happens to us. Yet, in so many cases, we later perceive that these bad breaks happen for a reason. Only one that we didn't understand at the time. We see this, for example, like a bankruptcy that gave us more time for spiritual growth. A problematic child that teaches us to be a better parent, and on. There are so many things that later on you realize God was helping you. It seems like a problem at the time, but it was really God giving you an opportunity to work on yourself and grow. Now, in Genesis 43:33, the brothers have gone home to Israel, have come back again for food. This is a later date. And Joseph again summons them, and he brings them into his palace, and he seats them down for a meal. In Genesis 43:33, it says, and they sat before him, meaning the brothers sat before Joseph. It said, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men marveled with one another. So what Joseph has done is he seated his 10 brothers in order of age. All the brothers are there except for Benjamin. Benjamin is still back with Jacob in Israel. But what's unusual about this is that these brothers were from three different mothers. So, they're all actually quite close in age. And it would have been, and as adults, it would have been really impossible for anybody, certainly a stranger, to know the order of their birth. So they're all very surprised and a little scared by this. So, you know, it's just a surprising thing. So they're marveling at this, but surely this was just not another unpleasant surprise. As the sages say, these confusing events later made sense when Joseph reveals himself. So, of course, later on, they're like, oh, of course he knew how old we were. He's our brother. But at the time, they weren't aware of this. So one interpretation of this, at least in terms of Jewish history or world history, is that when the Messiah comes, a lot of perplexing events in history will make sense in retrospect. They will be seen as paving the way to the ultimate arrival of the Messiah. But it's similar in recovery, that there's a reason for things happen. We may not understand them at the time, and we should just accept that things are happening for a reason, and perhaps they're part of a bigger plan for us to get better or help other people. Another way to look at it is the other really big question that comes up out of this moment and this sequence of verses is, why didn't Joseph communicate with his father at this point? I mean, obviously when he was in prison or when he was a slave earlier, it would have been impossible for him to communicate with his father. There was no internet or postal service or whatever that he could have gotten his hands on. But now he's one of the most powerful people in the world. It would have been such an easy thing for him to just dispatch some messenger or something to go find his father and say, Dad, I'm okay. But he doesn't. And this is a very confusing and to some people upsetting issue in looking at this part of the Bible. So this is what the interpretation, or one interpretation, is from the sages, from the commentators, which is that Joseph understood a couple of different things as a prophet. One thing he understood was that he had a destiny. There was a prophecy that he would help basically save the world from starvation. So he had to fulfill his part of that. And if he had communicated with his father, it might have gotten in the way of that goal. Another level of it, which is maybe even more profound, is that there's a concept in Torah thought that when 10 or more men make a vow to God together, that vow cannot be broken. Everybody is bound by it. Even God is bound by that vow. That's why Joseph, he is bound by this vow that his brothers made not to tell his father that what happened to him. And there's also a commentary that Isaac, his grandfather, who was still alive for part of this time, also knew what had happened prophetically, but didn't even tell his son that his grandson was alive. So here's this unbelievable thing where this man, Jacob, is in terrible grief that his son, his favorite son, has been killed or is missing. And people around him know what happened, including his own father, and they don't tell him. And Joseph knows what happened to him, and he can communicate, and he doesn't. So one idea that we can relate out of this in recovery is about the power of an oath. Now, we don't really have oaths today in the same way we had in biblical times, but they're similar because I think many of us have said at certain times in recovery or when dealing with someone else who's in recovery or addiction, God, help me, and I will never do this again. And then you violate that oath later. So I think that if it might help us in recovery if we could really understand the power of an oath, a promise to God. That's not like promising someone that you're going to pick them up at 4 o'clock. I mean, that kind of promise is important too, but this is a promise to God. You're making an agreement with the creator of the universe, so you should take it seriously, or don't make it if you're not intending to take it seriously. So then we have another perplexing moment when they've taken Benjamin. I just want to clarify something. In the earlier moment when his brothers are sitting before him in the meal, Benjamin was there at the table. I'm sorry, I misspoke. So Benjamin was there. So then, when the brothers leave Egypt, Joseph has his servant place a silver goblet in Benjamin's sack, and so it frames him for stealing. And they then arrest Benjamin and put him in prison. And the brothers are extremely distraught because, you know, they promised Jacob that they would take care of Benjamin. Benjamin is the only remaining son from Rachel, who is Jacob's, you know, favored wife, and this is his most precious son. And if anything happens to Benjamin, the brothers will never be forgiven. And here Benjamin is being taken prisoner, and you have to realize, think, you have to think about it at the time. They don't know who this man is. As far as they know, this man is a extremely powerful foreign ruler. As far as they know, their brother's going to prison forever. There's absolutely nothing they can do about it. Now, there's also some irony here, of course. Why didn't they get so worried when they were selling their other brother into slavery? That's part of the story, that Joseph is trying to make them think about what they're doing. You know, and so in Genesis 44:18, Judah comes up to Joseph and says, "O my Lord, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou art even as Pharaoh." It's remarkable to hear Judah say to Joseph, "For thou art even as Pharaoh," because Joseph was so powerful, only Pharaoh was more powerful than him. So it's a good moment to think about where Joseph came from. He was a 17-year-old boy when he came to Egypt. He spent 12 years in jail, and then was instantly put into this extremely powerful rank. So it's a way of reminding us that Joseph was not an ordinary man, and his destiny was determined by God. God wanted him to be in the position he assumed, so God enabled it to happen. And we can learn from this point as we make our way through recovery. If God has a plan for us, then that is the way it's going to be. So many recovering addicts express amazement at the accomplishments in their lives after gaining sobriety. Things like jobs, family, money, success, fame, respect, and so things like that. Joseph's story should inspire us to realize that anything is possible with God's help and God's will. And again, in this moment, the brothers didn't recognize Joseph, despite many clues that they were in the presence of someone who knew things about them that only a family member would know. It's absolutely, if they were looking at this rationally, there's no way in the world that this stranger, this high-level Egyptian government official, would know things about them. But one way to look at this is that they were unable to see. They couldn't see him, even though he was right in front of their faces. Now, one thought is that, well, Joseph looked different. He was wearing Egyptian clothes. He was wearing, like, that sort of King Tut, you know, makeup or whatever, and he looked different. But really, they just, it was incomprehensible that their brother, who they didn't like, who they didn't respect, who they sold as a slave, could be this person who they were terrified of, who was running a whole country, and really, in a way, running the whole world. He was the most powerful person in the world, basically, with the exception of Pharaoh. And this is, I think, such a classic case of denial that you see in recovery. There's something so unbelievably obvious right in front of your face, and you can't see it. This is what addiction is. You can spend 22 years believing in something that isn't correct, and despite all kinds of evidence that you're wrong, you just will not see it. You won't see it, or you can't see it. You won't bring yourself to see it. And this is what happens in addiction, and what we have to overcome in recovery. The avoidance of facts or emotional truths is really the signature of addiction. So our challenge in recovery is to move past this kind of avoidance and get to honesty. So now, in the next moment, Here comes Judah, and he says, the next thing he says is in 44:33, Genesis 44:33, he says, "Now therefore, let thy servant, I pray thee, abide instead of the lad, a bondman to be my lord, to my lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren." So what Judah is saying is, take me as your slave, imprison me, and let Benjamin go back to his father. So this is a pretty amazing offer, because again, Judah doesn't know that this is all going to work out right. As far as he knows, this is it. He's signing his own death warrant here. And also, you have to realize that these brothers were important people in their own right back home. These weren't like a bunch of guys. These were very significant people in their home country. For them to come down here and beg for food, and then for this guy, Judah, to offer to be prisoner of this foreign king so that his brother can go free, it's almost exactly the inverse of what happened when they sold Joseph into slavery. So it's an amazingly selfless act, although of course it contrasts 100% with this totally wrong decision they made 22 years earlier. And this is what in recovery we would call this going to any length. Can we go to any length to achieve recovery, even if it seems like something that's totally impossible, like a life sentence? And I think a lot of us have felt this way, like, wow, I got to give up booze and drugs or whatever. That's like a life sentence. How could I do that? But you got to go to any length. And so then after this happens, Joseph reveals himself to the brothers. And of course, they're all extremely surprised, I think you could say, to put it mildly. And he arranges for them to go back to Jacob. He wants to bring Jacob down to, and the rest of the family down to Egypt where there's food, because there's still terrible famine going on. And in Genesis 45:24, Joseph says, "So Joseph sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them," Joseph said to his brothers, "see that ye not fall out by the way." So what does this mean? See that ye not fall out by the way. It could also be understood as don't become agitated, don't fight, don't get worried or upset. Don't freak out on the way. And one way to look at this is he's saying don't be worried about Jacob's reaction, because you have to look at what's actually happening here. The brothers have to go back to Jacob and say, well, we've got some good news and bad news. The good news is, Joseph's alive and Benjamin's back with us intact, but the bad news is we've been lying to you for 22 years and we were actually responsible for trying to kill our brother. Try and put yourself in that conversation. How'd you like to be at that Thanksgiving dinner, so to speak? So it's understandable that they'd be worried about their father's anger, and they would fall out on the way, and something bad would happen to them, or they'd change their mind, or they wouldn't come back, or whatever. And this, we have moments like this in recovery. You know, we approach a fifth step. We're trying to tell our story. We're trying to go over our inventory of character defects to a sponsor or someone trusted. How can we admit what we've done in the past? Because, you know, some of the things that we put on our if you've done the fourth step right, you've put things on your fourth step that you're not proud of, that you really don't want people to know. As a spiritual mentor of mine said, the fourth step is not about, you know, how you were sad when your doggy ran away when you're in the fifth grade. I mean, that's nice. But it's really about, he said, what are a couple of things that you'd rather die than have other people know about you? That's the fourth step. That's when you're getting serious. And I think that this advice, see that ye not fall out by all the way, is a way of reminding us that we should be courageous in recovery. Be strong and courageous to do the tasks of recovery. And God will help us if we seek God.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com.